Hello, I'm Maria Titizian.
And I'm Rubina Margosyan, and this is The Week in Review.
Every week, we bring you the stories shaping Armenia and the region.
From politics and policy to social issues and conflict, we break down the news and what it means for you.
This week in the news, the Kremlin has a new point man on Armenia to ensure the implementation of Russia's state interests, another non-combat death in the military, and Armenian forces take part in NATO drills in Georgia. These stories and more in our weekly roundup of the news.
This week, the Russian outlet Vezimesti reported that Sergei Kiryenko, first deputy chief of staff of the presidential administration, has emerged as the Kremlin's point man on Armenia. Kiryenko and his team are now overseeing Armenia-related affairs. They also manage Russia's relationships with Abkhazia, South Ossetia, Moldova, and the breakaway region of Transnistria. According to the unnamed sources cited by Vezimesti, their main task is to promote the president's, the Russian president's interests and advance key state objectives. When it comes to Armenia, the focus appears to be on shaping the information landscape rather than the electoral processes. One source noted that Armenia's growing tilt towards the West is becoming a serious concern for Moscow, now a central issue in Russian state policy. Kiryenko's role will center on deploying soft power to maintain Russian influence in Armenia. A source close to the presidential administration told Vezimesti that the strategy would mirror the approach used in recent Abkhazia elections. While Pashinyan is expected to win re-election in 2026, Moscow's focus isn't on the outcome itself, but on preserving its leverage in the country. The source also noted that beyond former President Serzh Sargsyan and Robert Kocharyan, there are few, if any, new pro-Russian political figures in Armenia to represent Moscow's interests. Meanwhile, during a visit to Estonia, Pashinyan emphasized that Armenia has no plans to escalate, sever, or spoil relations with Russia.
Yeah, and this month's security briefing, Rubina, by Nerses Kopalyan, which is called Subversion and Electoral Interference, Russia and Armenia's 2026 Elections, looks at how Russia is going to utilize all of its levers, whatever lever it has, to try to influence everything that's coming up, because we do have a year of elections ahead of us. And it draws from Moldova's recent experience. And he writes that Armenia must brace for a coordinated and covert Kremlin strategy aimed at electoral interference and destabilizing its democracy. And he explains Russia's evolving hybrid warfare tactics and what he calls traceless manipulation operations. So it was interesting that this news breaks as we're publishing this.
And also we have the Gyumri municipal elections as a very recent example of very vocal support from Russian officials. And
talking about joining a union state.
And
it's a municipal election. Well, anyway, so the security briefing is up already on our website. You can check it out. Speaking of Russia, it continues to warn Armenia about the potential consequences of leaving the Eurasian Economic Union, or the EAEU, to join the European Union. Well, the EU's Commissioner for Enlargement, Marta Kos, told Azadutyun that Brussels would discuss the matter once Armenia submits an official application for EU membership, but stopped short of saying whether the EU would even welcome Armenia's bid. Meanwhile, Mikhail Agazantian, the director of, this is a long title, in all these sort of Russian things, right? The director of the first department of CIS countries at Russia's foreign ministry expressed concern over Armenia's move toward closer ties with the EU. He stated that while the bill on Armenia's EU membership adopted by Armenia's parliament in April doesn't yet challenge Armenia's membership in the Eurasian Economic Union, it's clear that at some point the demands of Brussels will clash with Armenia's obligations within the EAEU. He pointed out that areas like customs, trade policy, and technical regulations could be affected. Agasantian also emphasized that the EAEU agreement clearly outlines the process for withdrawing from this economic union, which can only begin if a member state sends a written notification, something Armenia obviously has not done so. He warned that if Armenia does violate the EAEU agreement, Russia and the other member states have the international legal mechanisms in place to protect their interests.
Earlier this week, the Georgian Defense Ministry reported, not the Armenian Defense Ministry,
this
Georgian reported that Armenia is taking part in the NATO-Georgia Exercise 2025, a multinational military drill held in Tbilisi. This is the fourth iteration of the exercises, which aims to strengthen crisis response coordination among NATO allies and partner countries. The exercise is both computer-assisted and includes field components. It's designed to train a Georgian-led multinational brigade headquarters in planning and executing crisis response scenarios. A total of 17 NATO members and partner countries are participating, including Georgia, of course, the US, UK, France, Germany, Turkey, and Armenia and Azerbaijan, among others. Several NATO commands and international organizations are also involved. Officially, Yerevan, as we said, has not reported on Armenia's participation.
Yeah, we always have to find out from other
sources
what our military is doing. It's a big secret, I suppose. And this week, the National Security Service reported the death of a conscript who was deployed in one of the border guard units in Armenia's Sunik region. According to preliminary information, the soldier died from a gunshot wound that came from his own assault rifle. An investigation has been launched to see, you know, what the circumstances are surrounding the incident. And this is already the third non-combat death we've had this year where a soldier has died under unclear circumstances.
And Amnesty International released its annual report on Armenia, highlighting a number of human rights concerns. The report points to the government's ongoing struggle to support the Artsakh Armenian refugees, many of whom continue to face major obstacles, especially when it comes to finding housing, employment, and access to education. The organization noted that their right to a safe and dignified return remains unmet. Amnesty also raised concerns about restrictions of freedom of expression and peaceful assembly, also noting that journalists and environmental defenders were harassed and threatened. The report documented pressure on reporters during the protests in April and May, where at least 14 journalists were injured. These are the protests led by the Archbishop Bagrat Galestanian last year. Well, the report says some of the journalists were pushed to the ground, others reportedly beaten by the police. The Human Rights Watchdog called out the Armenian government for the June 12 incident when during demonstrations against the Armenia-Azerbaijan border demarcation agreement, clashes broke out. This was the incident in front of the Armenia's parliament, leaving more than 100 people injured, including 17 police officers. Nearly 100 protesters were detained. At least 15 were later charged. And this is also the incident when one protester lost an arm because the police had used excessive amount of stun grenades. Mm-hmm. However, no police officers were held accountable following an investigation into their conduct. There were also concerns about environmental rights. Amnesty criticized the government for allowing the Amusar gold mine to resume operations in January, despite unresolved issues about water and land pollution. And environmental activists who raised the alarm were met with lawsuits and media smear campaigns, including accusations that their work was undermining national security. And Maria, speak of the environment, but at least the weather, the hail that started right outside. Well, we are having strange weather recently for this time of the year. Well, still, back to the Amnesty International report, the report did note some positive developments. In particular, it welcomed changes to Armenia's domestic violence legislation that offers greater protection for survivors, but it emphasized that discrimination against LGBTI people continues to be widespread.
And speaking of reports, also this week, Reporters Without Borders released its 2025 World Press Freedom Index. It ranked Armenia 34th in the world, a significant improvement over last year when we were at 43rd. And all the other countries in the region regress. We were the only country in Eurasia to move up.
And these reports are clashing because Reporters Without Borders is saying the situation has improved. Amnesty International is saying there was excessive force against journalists and protesters.
It's how it is. So RSF stated that despite a pluralistic environment, the media in Armenia remain polarized. The country is facing unprecedented level of disinformation and hate speech fed by internal political tension, security problems at the country's borders, and the country's complicated position between Russia and the European Union. It noted that the majority of media are controlled or affiliated with major political and commercial interests and continue to face pressure concerning their editorial policy, while state-owned media refrain from criticizing the government. And although it ranked Armenia 14th in the world in the legal indicator, RSF noted that the legal framework that regulates the sector does not sufficiently protect freedom of the press, nor does it allow for European standards. Recent reforms have not resolved problems posed by disinformation and gag orders. Access to state-held information is limited by the government.
And another report, the World Bank forecasts continued slowdown in Armenia's economic growth, citing the diminishing positive impacts of Western sanctions on Russia. In its latest quarterly report on economic developments in Europe and Central Asia, the bank projected a 4% growth for Armenia this year, attributing it to a stabilization of trade within the region. This projection is in line with the 4.1% economic activity rate reported by Armenia's Statistical Committee for the first quarter of 2025. While the economy remains active, the World Bank highlighted a rise in Armenia's unemployment rate, which increased from 12.4% in 2023 to nearly 14% in 2024.
This week, Armenia's Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan paid an official visit to Estonia, where he met with Estonian Prime Minister Kristen Michal and a number of high-ranking officials. The two leaders emphasized the importance of expanding economic ties. They also talked about Armenia-EU relations, including the visa liberalization action plan and the introduction of digital solutions in public administration. The Estonian Prime Minister expressed that country's readiness to support Armenia's reform agenda and implement joint programs in various fields. Pashinyan highlighted the dynamic development of Armenia-Estonia relations, both bilaterally and within the Armenia-EU framework.
In other news, after a nine-month gap, China has finally appointed an ambassador to Armenia. China has been without an ambassador in Armenia since July of 2024, when the former ambassador completed his diplomatic mission. China is one of Armenia's top trade partners. Between 2009 and 2022, China was consistently Armenia's second largest trade partner after Russia. In the past 2 years, it has lost this position to the United Arab Emirates. In 2023, Chinese imports to Armenia stood at $1.7 billion. Armenia mostly imports mechanical appliances and machinery, electronic devices, textiles and clothing from China. Armenia's exports to China in 2023 stood at $425 million, with more than 96% being copper and molybdenum ores and concentrates. Both Georgia and Azerbaijan have signed strategic partnerships with China. Armenia has not done so far. And we have an article by Hovhannes Nazaretyan. It's called "In Armenia-China Relations, Trade Takes Center Stage." It's from February of this year, so all the information is quite recent, and it's very comprehensive about all the intricacy or all the trade between the two countries.
And during this week's cabinet meeting, the Armenian government approved a 236 million euro loan from the Asian Development Bank to support the construction of a key section of the long-suffering North-South Highway. The funding will go towards building a 27.1-kilometer stretch of the Sisian-Kacharan Road, part of a larger 60-kilometer section with an estimated total cost of 335 million euros. This northern stretch of the highway is expected to significantly improve traffic flow, featuring modern infrastructure with multiple tunnels and bridges. Once completed, the section will have a wider 3-lane road and an increased speed limit, thank goodness, because driving 60 kilometers an hour is not fun. Cutting travel time by up to 2 hours, the project is set to be finished by November 2033. Wait, that's in 8 years, right?
We have good chances of living to see it.
Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan expressed confidence that the North-South project is moving into its final decisive phase, with negotiations ongoing for additional funding to complete the remaining section. Sorry, I'm giggling because, I mean, this has been going on for, I don't even know.
For so, almost as long as we've been reporting.
No. Well, okay, so the North-South Highway was conceived in 2009, so Do the math. The Armenian government then estimated its cost at $1.5 billion U.S. dollars, which was more than half of Armenia's state budget for that year. Its aim is to expand and modernize the main highways, running more than 550 kilometers connecting Georgia and Iran, thus making landlocked Armenia a transit hub for Iranian freight shipments to and from Europe. So I remember doing an interview when I was working elsewhere with the head of the Asian Development Bank, and he said something. So I'm just about 2012, 2013. And one of the things that was like an aha moment for everybody is when Armenia decided to conceive this North-South highway, it did not have the capacity at all to implement it. And then they brought in Italian and Spanish companies, and then there were these scandals about the depth of the asphalt, and it was just ridiculous, and it's still ongoing, which is incredible. But I have text that I'm supposed to read, so why don't I do
that? But that seems interesting, because parts of it are functioning, and going to Gyumri has become a much more, at least, pleasant experience.
If it's finished.
Even though you wouldn't like the speed limit either.
I still... Yeah. Well, the first phase, the least difficult in terms of terrain, was completed by the end of 2015 after 3 years of construction. It connected Yerevan with the nearby towns of Ardashat and Ashtarak. I mean, it's a very small stretch, you know, I'm just saying. Thereafter, difficulties with funding and general mismanagement delayed the project for years. In late 2018, the Spanish company, there you go, building a section northwest of Yerevan, pulled out of the project. Armenian law enforcement began a wide-ranging investigation into corruption around the project in 2019. The entire section connecting Yerevan and Gyumri, Rup, as you just said, the second Armenia's second largest city, is now under construction. So it's still not completed.
Completely. No, but parts of it, yes.
So you're zigzagging, okay? The costliest section of the project is going to be the southern Sunik region because of its, you know, rugged terrain. There's mountains and valleys and whatnot. Between Sisian and Kacharan, 27 bridges and 9 tunnels are planned to be built, including Armenia's longest tunnel at 8.7 kilometers long, passing under the Barguşat Mountains.
And the government has decided to extend social support programs for displaced Artsakh Armenian families for another 2 months. Recognizing the need for more time to review and finalize proposals for these programs, the government will continue providing assistance for, well, as I said, 2 additional months. This extension is designed to ensure that all displaced families continue receiving vital support while the government works through necessary updates to these programs. But also this program, if we are fair, is in response to a lot of the protests that were happening, demanding an extension to the programs. Well, earlier the government had planned to stop financial support for rent, and this is very specific, it's rent and utility payments, starting April 1. Initially, the program was to last 6 months only. This was right after the ethnic cleansing. It has been extended a few times already. Mm-hmm. At the end of last year, the government decided to stop the support for rent and utility payments, which was coming into effect on April 1. And this decision prompted a large rally. This was on March 29, organized by Artsakh Armenians, calling for the continuation of social support programs. And of course, there were also other demands. Since then, demonstrations have continued in Yerevan, with a group of protesters setting up a sit-in tent at Freedom Square. The tent was eventually removed when the government decided to extend the support programs. And we'll see what new programs will be offered. And I hope these 2 months is enough time to,
to help a bit.
Or at least design a more comprehensive a package for refugees.
I don't know. We use a word in Armenian, which is called dahaj. I don't know what the English equivalent is. Rather disgusting situation, perhaps. A fight broke out between civic activist Artur Chahoyan and the head of the Nork district of Yerevan, Dikrander Markaryan, resulting in Chahoyan being hospitalized with head and facial injuries. He was later released, and both he and 5 others were briefly detained by police before being let go. Now both Chahoyan and Der Markaryan face criminal charges. The confrontation began after Chahoyan criticized the shoddy construction of a local kindergarten and playground in that district, in Nork, in a social media post, which, you know, we watched. Well, in response response, Dermarkaryan allegedly sent him a voice message filled with sexually explicit insults and threats. It seems to be, you know, their modus operandi, you know, when all else fails, use sexually explicit insults.
However, what I find interesting is that this audio message has not been published yet, right. Or we haven't seen it.
Heard it.
Yes.
Well, and then on April 29, Chakhoyan and Yerevan City Council member Mesrop Manugyan of the Mother Armenia faction went to the Noronork Administrative Office to confront the head of the district, Dermarkaryan. The meeting didn't happen, but in protest, and I watched this, it was rather disgusting, Manugyan hung up photos of Dermarkaryan in the building's lobby and then poured yogurt over them, calling it a symbolic response to the insults. The next day, during a scheduled public discussion at the same office, Chakhoyan returned to demand accountability, and this time the situation turned violent, and there was a huge brawl, and I think several people were beating him up. It was just, yeah, I don't know what to say. Well, at any rate, as always, we talk about the articles that we published this week. We did mention today's security briefing, security report called Subversion Electoral Interference, Russia and Armenia's 2026 elections. It's a rather dense but very interesting read and something that I think. And anyway, I'll be doing a podcast with Nerses Kopalyan next week to you know, break it down a little bit further and get into the details.
And we did, you know, publish our SALT issue.
Mm-hmm. Which we always love to do.
Which we like to do very much. We enjoy doing. This month, we kind of brought everything under the title of Form to Color. Mm-hmm. Even though it was difficult to do this because it was such a diverse subject, mm-hmm. and it didn't have a particular, too obvious a focus other than lifestyle. Well, the one that we published the latest, still we have three articles coming, by mm-hmm. the way, so issue is not complete. But yesterday we published a piece by Lilith Markaryan. It's called A Little Less Strange, Yerevan's Board Game Subculture. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting read because it's the process of discovery of this mm-hmm. subculture in Yerevan's clubs and about board games and how kindly people treat each other and how strangers become friends so mm-hmm. fast around board
games.
Yeah,
I'm not a board game enthusiast, but yeah, I see the allure.
Neither was the author, but yeah, she discovered it.
Yeah, another story that we published in SALT is called Edible Stories Inspired by Nature and Culture. It's about banur pastry it's an homage to Armenia's culture. So they're designs that are inspired by ancient monasteries paired with the flavors of classic Armenian sweets. It's heritage reimagined. The sweets look lovely. We haven't tasted them, but the author, Henna Boshyan, who wrote, did, and they look really, really interesting. So a lot of innovation in food.
And some things that don't change.
Yes, and it spoke, you know, my pet peeve, but go ahead.
Yes, not only yours, everyone's. And it's really difficult to, I don't know.
Not lose your mind?
Not you know, start a scene at one point.
I have.
Also.
I'll tell you afterwards.
It's called Theater of Disrespect, How We're Failing Our Own Stage by Ruben Jambazian. And he's saying that the tragedy of Armenian theater is not only on stage, it plays out in the audience where phone screens glow brighter than any spotlight. Jambazian recounts his own personal experiences with the absurd. And so could we if we remembered any event that we attended ever.
Yeah, I know. Even the most,
it's,
you know,
it's just the modern culture. And
is it a modern culture?
I think so, because I think a lot of people fail to recognize how rude it is.
I don't know that it's modern. I think it's rooted in something, because for the last 25 years, Rube, every time I've gone to a play or anything, okay, people are on, okay, if they weren't on their phones, they were yapping to one another, you know, candy wrappers and just talking. And they get a phone call and they're whispering, I can't talk right now. I'll call you later. Just turn your phone off. You know, like, are you like the queen or the king of England? I don't understand. So, yeah. It really, sorry, as I said.
You should have written this piece.
Oh, I could have. I would have been. I would have been not as sympathetic. And then we had a great photo story by Aram Giragosyan called Art, Literally and Figuratively. It was part two, and he looks at the creative journeys of artists in Armenia, and this time it was about six artists, and how art has become an enduring force, a means of survival, expression, and connection beyond the confines of, you know, daily life, and some beautiful photographs.
Yes, and what I really, really like about this series by Aram is that you get to see the environments and the paintings of artists that you weren't necessarily following or you didn't know existed. Sure. And you get to see this whole other community that somehow isn't right in your face.
Yeah, and, but thriving in their own spaces and beyond.
In that sense, I really enjoy. And hopefully next installation by Aram would be more female artists.
Yes,
because
we had a lot of
by
men
chance,
this time.
Not by choice. This time it was all men.
Yeah.
But we'll make sure that that doesn't
Indeed.
Repeat itself.
And then we have a couple of upcoming pieces. We don't have a restaurant review this month, but we have a cocktail review about the martini. The reviewer will be anonymous, but it's a definitely interesting read. You're going to be publishing that tomorrow.
Well, we have been talking about it for several days
and we've
now.
Been drinking.
And we've been trying the martinis.
We've been trying the martinis around Yerevan. And then another interesting piece by Hranush Dermoyan, our staff writer, From Tradition to the Modern Table. It's about Lent in Armenia. And I was surprised. One of the things that were surprising for me was to have Lenten menus in restaurants. It was a new thing for me.
But. Yes, it was. It's like very delightful for me because
you're
for
vegetarian.
Once. Vegetarian. Yeah, for a vegetarian, for once, I don't get to, you know.
Suffer. Trying to figure something out.
Try to figure something to eat.
Yeah. Aside from.
Choose from the side dishes.
Or the children's
menu. Or the
menu.
Kids' menu. Or have
Salads.
To eat that. Greek salad that's
on
every
even
menu.
Even the salads, they're with fish or meat or chicken. It's incredible how
so
vegetarianism.
I know that might be the only religious holiday that,
that
I'm happy
you like.
About.
Well, that's the kind of week we've had here in Armenia. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend, and we will be back again next week.